Today's episode is brought to you by Wise, the account that helps you manage your money around the world, which is huge for travelers. I've been a customer and a fan for 10 years. The Wise account helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, and they do it all without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This service has been so critical for me in my life as a traveler, as a nomad, as somebody living abroad. And you can join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account can help you out on the road at wise.com/travel. That's Wise, wise.com/travel, or download the app. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at nissanusa.com.
There isn't a place like this anywhere else in the world.
Indeed, there is no place like this on Earth, and you're going to hear about it in today's special episode. I am going to include an entire episode from a podcast called Hidden Trails of Oregon. This is produced by my good friend and award-winning travel writer, Aaron Miller, who does a fantastic job of narrating this and putting together this immersive first-person journey across America's wild, weird, and wonder-filled state, the state of Oregon, which I personally fell in love with. This was the first Pacific Northwest area I visited. I mean, this wasn't a hard sell for me to share this episode with you because I'm wearing an Oregon hat right now. I have had such wonderful travel experiences around the state of Oregon, and this particular podcast series was recorded on location in surround sound audio. It's a documentary style podcast, and it's really designed to put you in the heart of Oregon's most spectacular travel experiences. You're going to hear from expert guides. You're going to hear from local characters. And of course, Aaron, who collectively take you beyond the guidebook to reveal Oregon's secrets and discover the places only the locals know. It's an awesome adventure through one of America's most awe-inspiring states, and you're going to really feel what it's like to be there for real. Of course, you can get more information about Oregon at traveloregon.com. And this is, again, one episode you're going to hear, an entire episode from the Hidden Trails of Oregon podcast. We'll link up to that in the show notes. I'm sure after listening to this, you're going to want to travel to Oregon, perhaps deep dive and do a little binge listening on this podcast. It's a wonderful show. And stick around on the back end. I'm actually going to share my favorite quote from this entire episode that you're going to hear right now. So please enjoy it. The official title of this episode, Hidden Trails of Oregon, Crater Lake, Lava Tubes, and Fly Fishing with a Native American Guide. Enjoy it, and I'll see you on the other side, my friend.
From wild coasts and volcanic peaks to lush vineyards and streets bursting with creativity, join me on the Hidden Trails of Oregon. We're going behind the travel veil to those secret places only locals know. In Oregon, the extraordinary is ordinary, and the adventure is about to begin. We have reached the final leg of our road trip around the state, following the Central Nature Trail from Crater Lake National Park to the Columbia River Gorge. We're gonna hike to snowy peaks, crawl in rocky caves, float down rivers, and maybe catch a fish or two. And through it all, we're gonna find out why for Oregonians, and for us, the outdoors is about more than pretty views and wild times. It's also about stewardship. Because experiencing the wonder of nature, as we'll see, is more than just a fleeting passion. It's the seed from which conservation grows. And we're going to start at one of the most awe-inspiring places in the entire world.
Well, we're about to enter the park. There's the sign.
Crater Lake National Park, west entrance. I'm going to do a little mouth trumpet.
We're going to get just a teaser here. Off to the left, right there. Oh my God.
Oh.
Look at that. That is what it feels like to see Crater Lake for the first time. We're with Nathan Dwyer from Main Street Tours, and he's taking us to his favorite viewpoint in the national park, the 8,000-foot summit of Watchman Peak. Deep drifts of late spring snow blanket the ground and dust the crater's rim in sparkling white. The cascades fade into the distance in soft hues of darkening purple. And in the center of it all, like a sapphire embedded in the earth, is the mirror still reflection of the most beautiful lake in America. In summer, a road circles the perimeter of the lake for 33 spectacular miles. But before the snow melts, most of it is closed. So Nathan parks the van, we strap our snowshoes on our backs, and hike the rest of the way along the road to the trailhead where we'll begin our climb.
All right, let's do this.
Yeah. Right, got it. So, in 1853, a prospector named John Wesley Hillman was looking for a lost gold mine. His story is that he fell asleep on his horse, but he was awoken when the horse stopped abruptly on that very edge of this rim, right here.
Smart horse.
At Discovery Point. He said he saw the deep blue lake, as he called it. You know, all the glory of the Lord unfurled before him, you know. And so he named it Deep Blue Lake at the time. And so he's credited with the quote-unquote discovery of the lake. But people have been here in the Klamath Basin for many, many thousands of years. In fact, it is known now that there were witnesses to the eruption of Crater Lake, of the caldera, 7,700 years ago. And there are artifacts found buried in ash of human settlements. So the indigenous people of this area, that is their heritage. And this place is definitely in all of their songs and all of their stories. There isn't a place like this anywhere else in the world. That color comes from it being the clearest, cleanest water. It's so clear and clean because it has no inlet and no outlet, like almost every other lake has. Instead, that water is something I like to call fossil water because it is exactly 7,700 odd years of snowmelt and nothing else.
7,000 years of snowmelt.
Every snow and melt contributes to the depth of the lake. In fact, the lake is gaining in depth incrementally, tiny amounts every year from all this snow melting into it. You know, given infinite amount of time and no other eruptions or earthquakes, then the lake would actually fill up over the top, breach the top, break down the caldera walls, and empty out eventually. Okay, so at one point we would have been traversing the flanks of a mountain called Mazama, and it was a stratovolcano, so it has many eruptions. And it erupted so many times around the rim that it weakened the whole base of the mountain, such that the entire mountain sank into itself cataclysmically in a matter of 24 hours, in a matter of one day. There was a mountain standing here with all its glaciers and trees and all its glory. And the next day, a smoking pit, a vast depression in the earth that it had left behind.
So it wasn't a volcanic eruption in the way we think of it as blowing off the top and leaving this crater behind. You're saying it was a series that undermined the structural integrity of the mountain and then it actually collapsed in on itself.
Exactly. It was less an explosion than it was an implosion. Huh. So we can get off-road anytime here. We have to kind of... We got to get on top of that.
Just shedding a layer here because the trail's getting really steep and we're putting on snowshoes for it. And snowshoes are a lot of fun, but they are tiring. We have about a mile to hike up to the top of Watchman Peak, but it's going to be totally worth it because it's the most amazing view.
All right, let's get these on. You'll wear these ones. You just kind of stick your hoof in there. Snowshoes are not completely without their hassle, but they are absolutely necessary. As you'll see very soon, you know.
Sometimes you gotta work for it.
Yeah.
But you know, I always think that
all the best things you gotta work for.
All the best things you gotta work for, and I always think the quality of a view, the awesomeness of a view is relative to the how hard you have to work to get there.
Yeah. That's right. Snowshoeing is fairly intuitive. You just walk, but you take larger, higher strides like a monster or a yeti. And welcome. We are now in the backcountry.
Yes.
And it takes about 10 minutes or 20 minutes to get warmed up and used to this pace. But you get in the rhythm, and it's really a wonderful trance-like state. You get in the rhythm from breathing and marching.
I love snowshoeing, but it's already feeling a little tiring. But you feel like you're really off the beaten path, which of course you are, just walking through these big snow drifts and the lake teasing me, peeking out below me. All right, let's keep going.
These are bear tracks.
Bear tracks? You can see the claws.
You see the claws. Now when it gets steep like this, you want to kick step again, because the bottom of these snowshoes has crampons that will dig in and keep you from sliding backwards.
Feels like it's opening up a little bit.
Yeah, and you see the shelter.
Oh yeah, we can see the summit. It looks close, but looks can be deceiving. I feel like we're the only human beings on the earth right now. That is silent.
Yeah.
It's astonishing how quiet it is. And that's actually, for me, a big part of being in nature too. It's the sound element of it, just like getting away from the noise. All right. Final stretch feels like getting super steep. Really digging the poles in. Now, let's get up this last section. Oh man, this is crazy steep now. All right, last bit, pounding the corner. Come on. Come on. Oh, oh yeah. Oh my God. There is the lake. Oh my God. Woo! Yes.
It is astonishing. A blue so deep, so pure, so vast and all-encompassing that it fills every sense, not just the eyes. For the Native American Klamath people who have made their home here for thousands of years, Crater Lake is a sacred place, and it's easy to see why. Nowhere is nature's sublime beauty and raw power seen together in such harmony in a single glance. We thought we'd reach the end. In summer, we would have. There would have been nowhere else to go. But Nathan has other ideas. The winter snowpack has buried the watchtower that gives this peak its name up to its roof. And we're going to climb to the top of it for a view almost no one gets to see.
Do not get pitched over that way.
Yeah, that way.
If you fall, like hug the rock here, okay?
Okay.
Now we're doing like low-level alpinism.
One side is pretty much straight down, and you are not going to be able to stop yourself. It's about a narrow 3-foot snow path. Oh man.
Okay, so the
exposure's coming in here.
Super take it easy.
Coming around the corner.
Right in my
and we are way places. Above. Okay, I'm stepping
if
in your
you
shoes.
Fall backwards, you'll not stop.
Okay. High consequence here.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I fell forward, it's okay.
Okay. That's the way to go. Easy there.
Oh
guys.
My god. It's a little intense. Looking
no,
behind.
Right on this cornice, so.
Oh
you can't
my
go
god.
Too far out.
Yes! Yes!
Yeah, kick those in. Kick those in.
Here,
hard.
Give me your pole. Give me your mic, please.
Yes, sir. And this way is treacherous
yes!
too. Any which way you fall here is doomed.
We're right on the edge.
This is real alpinism. Good work.
Yes.
And we certainly worked for it, didn't we?
You know, you look at landscapes like this, you just think that this is why poetry was invented, right? Mm-hmm. Like the first people that came up there, it's just like you can't help but think in that kind of aesthetic. And it links us, it binds us in a way, right? Like what we're feeling here on the top of this insanely crazy and exposed ridge is the same as the first people that came here. Is we're all kind of feeling that same sense of awe and wonder, and that kind of connects us in some ways, I always feel.
Yeah, that's right. You really can't help but feel it. When you put in a little effort to get a little higher or, you know, get to another vantage point, you know, you feel a sense of being placed in this time and space in a different way. That's the sublime. The sublime is a timeless element that is beyond what we can conceive of. It brings you out of your routines and gives you a new perspective. It's also super important for itself and for our view toward conservation. It instantly, you know, gives you a feeling of also wanting to protect a place like this because it's so important for the soul of humankind in the future of not only this landscape, but the future of humanity, I believe. So it's big. And that seems like a general statement. It can even seem cliche, but I don't mind.
I think it's spot on. Nathan, I don't know how easy it is to hug in snowshoes, but I feel like I've got to hug it out, man. Thanks for taking me here. This is amazing. It's one of the most
down,
amazing
we'll go down
places.
Together.
Yes! I am looking out at the most magnificent view I've ever seen. Crater Lake is spread out before me. The deepest, purest blue you'll ever see just fading into this delicious turquoise color. It's absolutely breathtaking, it's stunning, it's moving. And you can understand why when the Native Americans who lived in this area, when they would come up here, they revered this place as a holy place. This was a sacred place to them, and it still is for us to this day, because when you're in landscapes like this, when you're immersed in these landscapes, when you've climbed up on your own 2 feet to the top of a view like this, you feel connected to something bigger than yourself, something that makes you feel humble, but part of something vast and incredible. Every single thing I can see here is mountains, the incredible cascades fading into this disappearing lines of blue mountains. It's like nowhere else on earth. You have to come here to see it, to feel that reverence for yourself. And that's what this episode is all about, because nature doesn't just make us feel wonder. It makes us want to protect it too. And that's why you have to just jump straight in. And that's what Oregon is all about. And we have lots more to come. How the heck do we get down from here?
Oh, so, I don't know. Well, there's an easy way. And there's a safe way.
All right, down. Oh, I like this. It's like you're mini skiing down.
Yeah, kind of.
Yes! This is brilliant. Oh!
Yeah! Glissade!
Yeah, I did the old avalanche training arrest, that's right. Crater Lake! Woo!
We leave Crater Lake and drive 3 hours north to the legendary adventure town of Bend on the banks of the Deschutes River. We're in search of more of that wonder and reverence that we felt on Watchman Peak. And Bend doesn't disappoint, but in a completely different way. Because from the top of a volcano looking down, we're going beneath one to peer inside. But first, it's sunset and we're going for a paddle.
This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under 50 bucks. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show.
Pretty immediately as you leave town, you exit the city and enter the beautiful Ponderosa Pine Forest. And you go from down here where it's warm and dry to up in the Cascades where we have many feet of snow.
This is Chris Pleasance from Wanderlust Tours, a local outfitter that specializes in what Bend is all about.
I think in general the vibe out here is, and the reason that people come here, is because of the laid back and, you know, outdoorsy vibe and how beautiful those outdoor things we have are out here. You know, you can go up into the mountains to ski. When the snow melts, you can go up there to backpack, mountaineer on the volcanoes we have here. We've got tons of lakes and rivers. So I think that's really what draws people to Bend, is really that access to the outdoors.
All right, so turning off here onto a little dirt road.
Dillon Falls Day Use area down here.
Let's jump on the river for some sunset.
All right. Let's hop out here.
Grab onto the current.
Okay. There you go. And then you're just going to walk your hands back. And then if you want to try to flip it over to either side, there you go. Got it.
Yep. You carry it down.
Walk on down here.
Wow, what a beautiful spot to watch the sunset.
Flip it around. Oriented like this.
Just immediately shoulders dropped, don't they? Just like coming down to a place like this. Sun setting. It's quiet. River is perfectly still.
Calm out here, not too windy right now. So
it's
It's always slightly awkward getting in, but I'll basically push this back here. It's gonna be a little bit tippy until I push you a couple more feet in, and then it'll get more stable. And
okay. Let's do it.
Go.
On the river.
Off you go.
Yeah.
Just go 20 feet or so out there. We'll be right behind you.
Oh, so chilled. Just the perfect time of day for a paddle on the Deschutes River. So relaxing already. Been on the water for about a minute.
I kind of scoot us off here. And there we go. We're off from the shore now. All right, Aaron, so we're gonna just paddle upriver for a couple minutes here, get the arms warmed up, enjoy a little bit of the river here, and then we'll stop and chat about some things in just a couple minutes.
Sounds perfect, yeah, just enjoy some of this paddling. All I can hear is a bird song, a lap of water as I paddle through this still river. Sun is just turning the banks golden. Chris is just up ahead of me there. We're drifting through the river. And where ocean kayaking is filled with energy and adventure, river kayaking, at least when it's smooth like this, is just like a kind of water meditation. Well, I'm actually a little bit disappointed, Chris, because we're joined by about 50 swallows just catching their dinner and skimming the water around us. I thought we were going to have this place to ourselves. And about a million frogs, it sounds like, over there.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to the sounds of spring out here. The frogs have just awoken from their hibernation, and they're ready to get it on, make some tadpoles. So the males will use their voice to attract females, and that's what you can hear happening over there, the sweet sound of spring baby frog making.
The sweet sound of horny toes.
Yeah, exactly. Man, look at all those birds. They're just going crazy up there. Wow. That's the beauty of coming out on the river during sunset here, is all the birds come out to munch on the evening hatches.
There are dozens and dozens of swallows just swooping and flying by and skimming the water and looking for their dinner and enjoying those last beautiful moments of sunset. They're everywhere, all around us.
So we're gonna paddle up and around the corner here. There's something pretty neat at the top of this tree off to the left here that I want to point out. Osprey really like to build their nests at the top of trees, especially dead ones like that. And especially right along the side of the river. So that's an osprey nest up there. It's been there for many years at this point.
I feel like that's the penthouse of osprey nests. You know,
that's a pretty good one as far as they go. Yeah, you got a view of the mountains, the river, get to hear the frogs. Yeah. This is wild rose that we're sitting right next to. It's basically the first species that all roses came from. Oh, there's the osprey. You can hear him right behind us.
Oh.
Yeah, see? Flying right over here.
Flying around there.
Yeah, about to come right overhead.
It's beautiful, that osprey just silhouetted, gliding in the sunset. Babies chirping underneath. It's idyllic. I always feel like when I'm in a place like this that something just relaxes in my mind.
Absolutely, yeah. I think one of the things that I've noticed from spending time outside with myself and friends and guests doing the tours is that we don't sit in silence outside enough. That's one of the most powerful things that you can do outside, is sit and listen to what's going on around us. We're surrounded by so much noise every day, no matter where you are. And a lot of times people just continue on with that when they go outside. You know, they're constantly moving, walking, talking, whatnot. We don't actually sit still and listen to it very often. And when you do, it's pretty incredible. We're part of it all, but we very often times separate ourselves from the world out here. And so experiences like this can help us, you know, reconnect, find our place in that. Because if we think we're separate from all of this, then that's not a great foot to start on.
Man, I love just floating around having deep conversations.
Pretty nice. Let's paddle a little further upriver here before we go back and have some dinner. I haven't even noticed that. Looks like we got a beaver lodge over to the left over there. We get to see them occasionally. Beaver are really cool creatures. They eat the cambium layer. You know what? Is that a beaver swimming upriver towards us right now?
You're joking.
It's something. I think that might be a beaver swimming upriver towards us right now.
Oh my god.
Hold that thought. I wasn't expecting to see that.
I've never seen one before.
Let's just float down towards it. Be nice and quiet. There it goes. But these guys are incredibly important out here. Beaver are really crucial to a lot of watersheds, and one of the things that they do when they build dams, they completely can change watersheds by allowing more water to stay in there.
There it is again. I think he's on the banks.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Swimming up there.
So what do you think he's doing there right now?
I think it's probably just cruising around, going to look for either some food or some more materials to add onto their lodge. They're constantly building their lodge. Because they will stay in that lodge for as long as they can. They live there year-round, so they're just constantly adding to it, constantly renovating.
Putting me to shame, doing lots of home improvement.
Exactly.
I just spend my Sundays down the pub.
Busy beavers. Whoa! Oh,
what is that?
You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, fish just came all the way out of the water.
Probably trout.
And every time I start talking, all these these animals are like, no, I'm the star of the show.
Could you just say, like, oh, bear on the side of the...
Yeah. Ooh, it's starting to get chilly.
Yeah, it is.
I gotta get back to my...
Yeah, I gotta warm up a bit.
Sweet. Man, that was speedy. Nice job, we made it back.
That was so fun.
We didn't lose
baby
anyone.
Ospreys,
thank you.
A beaver,
uh-huh.
A deep chat, some floating, some sunset, and some horny frogs. What else could you want from a kayak?
Lava flow peppers the banks along this section of the Deschutes. It was born 7,000 years ago when a nearby eruption spewed molten rock across 10 square miles, damming the river for a time and burning all in its path. And that same eruption created our next stop too, because as the lava flowed, it was pushed underground and formed a network of caves that still honeycomb the ground to this day. They're called lava tubes, and we're going inside one.
Well, before we go underground, we're going to get you fitted out with helmets here. Doesn't need to be too tight. We're not doing backflips or anything down there.
That's what you think.
I guess I haven't gone underground with you yet before, Aaron. So there you go.
Let's get this helmet strapped on.
Cool. How's that feel? It's on there good?
I feel like a caving Top Gun right
now. That is good.
Let's go. I'm so ready for this. I'm a little bit worried because I figured we'd be like walking into a cliff cave, you know, and just like going in gently, but I'm actually looking at a hole, a pretty ominous looking hole in the ground right now.
Yeah, yeah. The way that we get into the caves here, the only reason we have access to this cave is because of what we call a skylight. So the roof of this cave just happened to collapse right here, creating an entrance that we can now get down into it. All right, we'll turn our headlamps on here so we can see. Use the railing here. Watch your head at the bottom. There's kind of a low rock down here.
Going down. about 25 steps into the ground. Wow. Yeah, I don't know what I expected, but it genuinely looks like a tomb. It's probably 20 feet tall, I don't know, 40 feet wide. It's different to any other cave I've been into in before.
Yeah, yeah, these tubes are created from rivers of lava.
I'm going to switch my headlamp on, and oh my gosh, we're heading down. I can see, like, it's just winding around the corner. It's dark. How far does that go back?
So this cave is 1,860 feet long, but it feels like quite a lot farther than that when you get in the cave here. The ground is kind of uneven, boulder crawling, and lots of zigs and zags in the cave here, so it ends up feeling like you're walking quite a bit further than that.
And the rock formation on the top is really interesting. It looks like the rock's melting from the ceiling.
Yeah, the texture that we're seeing on the ceiling here with all of these drips. These are what we call lava sickles. We're really creative with our naming. You just take icicle and put lava on top of it. The ceiling and the walls of this cave would have still been molten lava as this whole thing was starting to settle and cool. And all that molten lava would have been dripping down onto the floor. And eventually, it reached the point where it turned into solid rock, freezing in place those drips that were dripping off the ceiling.
It looks exactly like that. If you could imagine, like, holding a candle upside down and letting it drip, you can see the movement in it. Mm-hmm. I'd never really thought of it like that before, but it makes sense that the lava flow would solidify on top, and then that would insulate the inner lava, and then that would just keep pushing through. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's hard to comprehend. It's very easy for, like, us in our, you know, the quick lives that we have compared to this kind of deeper geologic time to think that this is all stuff in the past. But it's really interesting to think that this is a process that's continually ongoing. We're seeing one example of it in the past, but this is a process that's happening all the time. And there's something incredibly mind-blowing about that. You just looked over my shoulder in a really scary way, by the way.
Yeah, I always think that it's interesting because everything looks static out here, right? There's no volcanoes erupting anywhere near us. But we are by no means in a dormant period out here. The volcano that created this lava tube is still a very active volcano, only about 20 miles from where we are right now.
Oh, I feel like it's narrowing down a little bit down there.
Yeah, the cave has this interesting formation of where it narrows and then it opens up and then it narrows and it opens up. And the reason for that is because the lava or the volcano emits lava at different rates. And so once it starts to slow down the rate at which it's emitting lava, the cave will start to narrow and then it'll get another surge and it'll push through and open back up again into a big room. And then it'll slow down a bit and narrow, and then you'll get another surge that causes it to open up again. And so that's why we've observed the widening and the narrowing of the cave.
We're gonna have to scramble over a few boulders to get to the next piece of the cave.
Yeah, so this is one of the first kind of boulder fields we'll have to go over here. So just watch your step, make sure you test the rocks before you trust them.
Using hands and feet. Find our way across. Oh, so I'm having to duck down now because the ceiling has got so low. Okay, just kind of crawling down backwards here. Looking for some handholds. All right. Excellent.
Nicely done.
Made it down. It's too small to stand up in now. I mean, you found a little pocket there.
We're getting there,
We're getting there.
It gets a little lower here.
All right, up the impossible boulder wall or crawling through the tiny, terrifying crack?
I prefer the impossible boulder crawl, but, you know, once again, choose your own adventure.
Wait, they both go the same place?
They do both go the same way.
Nope.
This way requires less crouching.
Okay. All right, cleared that boulder wall. Seems to be leveling it out. Oh my God, it's just going on forever. I kind of can't believe we're here in a place like this. When we talk about exploring, we talk about, you know, exploring the Amazon or crossing deserts, but there's so much hidden under the ground too, isn't there, that you don't even really think about until you come down to a place like this.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's miles and miles of caves out here to be explored.
You don't think of this as like a spectacular view, but it is, because it's such a rare view. Like, you know, you never get to see something like this. I almost feel like I'm kind of peering through the inner workings of the earth. Like, these are the bits you're not meant to see. This is like behind the magician's trick, right? Like,
exactly.
The trick is up there. That's the result. And we're down here where, you know, you're not supposed to be, behind the magician's, where he's hiding his cards. It's kind of cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that in addition to obviously just the beauty of seeing the cave and the formations that we get to see down here, just like the experience of being underground is beauty in and of itself. Just feeling yourself being surrounded by earth in all directions.
It's like the exact opposite of standing on top of a mountain, but not, you know, lesser for it. It's just different, like really different.
And now we've reached the first crawling portion of the cave.
Oh, here we go. You're not joking.
No. You ready to be rebirthed?
I don't know. That is really small. What is that, like 3 feet high or something like that? It's two feet
oh,
high?
Oh man, it's probably less than 3 feet high. You gotta get on your hands and knees to get through there.
Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah?
I really want to try it.
Feeling up for it?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Okay. Just kind of squeeze your way through, get down on your hands and knees. All right. On through here.
This is kind of insane. Yep.
All right, I'm through. Just embrace the dirt, and we'll get clean again once we get back on top.
I am embracing the dirt. It's definitely one thing I'm doing. Crawling, I'm about 6 inches above this ground. It's like a sandy ground. Crawling through this tunnel.
Squeeze.
This is insane.
Nice.
Oh, that's fun, though.
You made it.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning, and you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, Jason here. Did you know we have a free weekly newsletter over at zerototravel.com/newsletter? I put my heart and soul into this newsletter and love keeping in touch with listeners off the podcast. That's where you can find out about all of the latest and greatest events, trips we're planning, and of course, you're going to get money-saving travel tips, destination advice, all kinds of stuff to provide value and help you add more travel into your life. So why not sign up? Again, totally free, no cost at all. zerototravel.com/newsletter. Excited to welcome you into that community. Thanks for listening.
All right, so it's gonna stay pretty low here. There's one spot right here where you can stand for just a second. Stretch out the back. All right, gets a little bit shallow down here again, so watch your head.
Okay. Really hard to walk through this.
this. Try not to bang my head. Oh.
All right. We're here. The back of the cave. Almost the back of the cave, that is. We've still got maybe 50 feet or so to go. It looks like the end of the cave.
It does look like the end.
So, at this point, I'm going to take my backpack off because it gets too narrow. This one's going to be significantly narrower than the last one we went through.
Significantly narrower.
How's that possible?
It's about the size of the width of your shoulders. Just for a second. So it'll be about as narrow as the last one we went through. And then there's one spot where it squeezes and you have to really wiggle your way through and then it opens back up again. All right. But the one spot that it squeezes, you really kind of have to shove yourself through. I kind of like to do the inchworm technique where you'll basically...
That doesn't sound fun.
Oh, it's tons of fun. What do you mean? You basically get on your hands and knees like you're planking and then you'll scoot yourself forward like that.
Okay.
All right, the final push here. Yep, I'm right in the tight spot here.
Oh my God. Chris is literally worm crawling himself through the cave in front of me right now.
All right, I'm through.
This is the claustrophobia test right here, isn't it?
You got this.
You know that moment when you look behind you and it's just pure darkness for 1,000 feet?
Hey, you can either be alone with that, or...
I sort of feel like I might not fit through this. All right. Okay, I'm contorting myself. Oh, here we go.
Oh. There you go.
All right. This is...
Welcome.
Yes. This is the end of the cave. It's high.
No walk in the park, that's for sure.
Okay. I think this is one of the maddest things I've ever done. I'm just I'm gonna pause here in this position, lying on my stomach 1,000 feet into a lava tube underground, and just reflect on what am I doing here? How have I come to this point in my life that I'm squeezing through a crack in a lava tube? But yes, I've survived. Yes! This place feels so spacious now. Oh, God. Dude.
Welcome back.
Chris, thank you.
Yeah.
What an adventure.
You did it.
What an adventure.
But we're not quite done yet, because Chris has one last thing to show us.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do down here is turn all of our lights off and experience total darkness, because you really don't get to see that. Or experience that many other times in your life, except when you're, 50 feet underground like we are right now. So let's go ahead and turn these off.
Oh my God.
And now, welcome to total darkness.
My eyes open or closed?
I don't know, I can't see.
I'm putting my hand directly in front of my eyes and I can't see a difference at all.
Yeah.
Can we stay in silence for like 30 seconds and see what it feels like?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's count down from three. I'll count down from three. Let's try to be as still and quiet as we can. All right, ready? 3, 2, 1. All right, you can go ahead.
Oh, I didn't like that.
Was it just me, or did it feel like someone was looking over your shoulder?
No, I didn't feel spooked, but I could feel like hear a rumble. Did you hear any of that? Like an earthy rumble.
You can hear pretty much everything when we're quiet down here. You can hear, I feel like I can hear myself blink.
Yeah. Or my heartbeat.
You can hear your heart beating, can hear all the clothes on your body rustling around. It's pretty silent down here. All right, see you guys. Have a good time.
No!
I'll see you at the bed.
No!
We survive, and Chris doesn't leave us in the dark, of course. But on my way out, I can't help but marvel about the immense forces that created this cave, the incomprehensible power that can collapse a mountain at Crater Lake, and the eons to fill it with raindrops and snowmelt. This deep geologic time is impossible for the flash of our lives to comprehend. But yet, somehow, being here, we can catch a glimpse of it, as fleeting as birdsong at dusk on the river. and it is to another river that we're headed next. Not to kayak, but to commune, to slow down. And maybe, if we're lucky, catch a fish or two.
This is the Wolf Point area where we're driving through. So this is all reservation land, everything that you're seeing.
We're with Alicia Littleleaf, a member of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs and the co-owner of Littleleaf Guide Services. She's taking us on a very special fly fishing trip to some secret spots on tribal land that you can only access with a native guide.
So the Warm Springs, the Wasco, and the Paiute. That's the three tribes that are down here, and myself and my husband and our kids are descendants of the Warm Springs and the Wasco.
It's such a different landscape than we've seen before. Like, we've come down through the coast, and, you know, right. We were in Bend yesterday, but suddenly we're in really, like, the high desert here, I guess.
Yeah, it's a very high desert. And right now, the roots are drying up. We harvest the roots down here, but the wild celery is coming in harvest. So me and my husband both are very active in harvesting our first foods year round. And which is, again, it's our way of staying connected to our roots and our way of life and staying connected to Mother Earth and appreciating her bounty and her harvest.
Here on our first stop, the Deschutes River is looking good today. I'm feeling excited. I think I might catch my first fish today. I'm in good hands. When I say I might catch my first fish, I think I mean Alicia might catch my first fish for me.
So what I'm going to show you is, I like to tell people when they're first learning it, to hold the fly rod, is you're saying hello, goodbye. Hello, goodbye. And that's the form you need. You need this 180 motion.
I'm lifting up my
hello,
arm. Goodbye, I'm casting.
Goodbye. Yep. It's about keeping that same consistency and that fluent motion.
Okay.
So on three, you're going to pull forward. One, two, three. Perfect. Okay, so that's good form there.
Okay.
Good. So now that we got this motion down, what I want to show you now next is a roll cast. So when you roll cast, you bring your fly halfway into you, kind of drag it. Your rod tip will go high up in the air and you flick it out and over.
Okay.
It's a little challenging to learn at first.
Okay.
It's all timing. It's all fly management and timing it. Perfect.
Just pulling up the slide. I like this. This feels good, actually.
Right? You like roll casting.
Oh, I saw a bubble.
You're a natural roll caster. Anytime there's branches and trees like this, this is coverage for fish. This is where fish like to be.
Yeah,
if they're not out here, they're going to be down there close to the embankment where you've seen that big trout come out. They know there's flies over here. They know there's a bunch of food, and they're like, I'm staying close in because I want a good meal.
So how much of it is just about, like, knowing the ecosystem of the river?
I would say that I really just seen a really, really big fish rise. I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh.
First things first.
It's so huge. I'm like,
Let's go get it.
We have to go down to that one.
Yeah,
you know,
we can't
leave that one there. We'll make our way up to the embankment. We're going to drop down that way.
Right, sounds good.
Oh, my goodness. That was a freaking toad. Okay, so come down here.
We're actually getting to wade into the water now, which is kind of the bit I was looking forward to the most. I always seen fly fishermen and women out there casting their rods from the river. It always looks so cool and peaceful. Ooh, something's jumping.
Perfect.
It's like a little game of chess with the trout. The trout or the grandmaster.
Another foot out. Yep, just like that. So you're becoming way fluent because you're getting way comfortable and it's becoming more natural. So You're working it. You became one with the flow.
You really do. It does feel like you're becoming more. I'm becoming more connected with the river. Can I do a cast out?
Yeah. Yep. Perfect. Oh my goodness. Yes. You graduated roll casting.
Yes.
That was beautiful. I love that. You corrected it. You're like, it's too close in. Yep. Perfect. So now start out again. Roll cast, side cast right in front of you. Leave it out there. Leave it out there. We want to make sure nothing's going to say hello. Put your tip down and keep letting it drift all the way down. All the way till it straightens out below you. There. Oh, that's a fish.
Yes. Yes. Come on. Yes. Right in the basket. 3 points.
Yeah! Life on the line.
All right, my first fish.
Tug is a drag, man. This
Who
is
would have thought I caught
back.
A 4 foot, 35 pounder my first time?
So if you look at this, see how he's got a really dark back and a really chromy body?
Yeah.
This is a steelhead smolt. So you can technically tell people, I caught my first steelhead of the year.
I caught
and
my first steelhead of the year.
Even they don't need to know the size. You know, even if it was a baby, it's still a steelhead.
It's not a baby.
So let's take this fly out and then I'll let you grab it and release it.
I'm going to release it?
That's your fish.
All right.
So.
I don't think I've ever
touched a fish
before.
Yeah, you're going to touch your first fish, and I'm going to get a picture of your first fish.
All right. Where do I grab it?
Just get a grip on it.
Anywhere?
Yep.
Okay, come on. He's a slippery little bugger, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's winning this battle. Okay. Oh, God. I can't. There we go. I got him.
All right.
Wow. Can you enlarge this in Photoshop later? I mean, he's barely poking out my hand.
He's so life at the end of the line.
Don't worry, little mate. You're going back in.
Good.
All right. There you go, buddy.
Bye.
Have a good life.
Water is life. There's more.
Yes.
Now let's get mom or papa or
All
big
right.
brother
yeah,
or
yeah.
big sister.
Exactly.
Yes.
I'll work my way up the food chain here.
Sweet. That's cool.
Yes.
Yes.
So happy.
It may be the smallest fish ever to be caught on the Lower Deschutes River, and producer Jason may have caught a genuine prize fish exactly 2 minutes later.
That's a two-hander! Oh my God!
But I don't mind, because it's not really about catching the fish, for me at least. It's about connecting with the river. And though Alicia is clearly addicted to the drug of the tug, catching toads, as she would say, isn't all it's about for her either.
We call it river therapy. We're in a session of river therapy right now.
I feel it. I feel it.
So, and not only that, I teach our clientele, like, when you get here, if you got a lot of blah, 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 blah going on in the brain and you're just here, there, scattered everywhere, it's going to show when you're trying to get this natural, because you're here to let go. You're here to dial in with Mother Nature. Let it all go. Let it go and dial in. Once you do, then it's going to be rewarding and it's going to pay off.
You mentioned you're involved in a lot of advocacy and conservation.
We became a voice for the voiceless, which these fish can't speak. They can't tell us if they're sick or if they're not feeling good or the water's too warm or there's too much chemicals and crap in there. And so a lot of the river warming up and everything and the pH levels has a lot to do with the fish becoming sick. And they're resilient fish, but it's like, how resilient should they have to be? So that's why me and my husband became a voice for them, because they are our first foods for one, but we have to have something for our future generations to come. It's about our kids. It's about them and their kids. We have to leave something for them. So as Indigenous, we believe of preserving for future generations. I mean, look at this. This is a wild area. This is a very wild, scenic area. To have something wild, you have to give back. It's our duty. Even if there's a bunch of garbage here and it wasn't mine, I'm going to pick it up, because we don't need microplastics in here. We don't need trash coming in this river. I mean, if you're going to consume these fish, guess what you're consuming part of? What they're ingesting, you know? So I always say we're here for, as a Indigenous first and then as a fly fishing outfit.
First Foods is something you've mentioned quite a few times. What is that for people that don't know?
So the First Foods is for the first people of this nation. We were here first. We got put on our reservations and our way of life was taken from us. And so our First Foods are, our First Foods are the salmon, the trout, the steelhead, the sturgeon, the eel, the lamprey eel, all these fish, the roots, the celery, the choke cherries, the huckleberries. The list is extensive. It's deer meat, it's elk meat, it's antelope. These are all our First Foods, and they're all affected when we can't take care of the land, we can't take care of the river. When we don't have any of this anymore, we're not going to have it. We're already seeing it. The steelhead are going away. The salmon are getting smaller. Those are our First Foods. And that's why it's so important for us to do what we're doing. It may not even be enough, but at least it's something. We're not just doing nothing. So that's our First Foods.
There's an old Native American proverb which says, only when the last tree has been cut down, the last fish has been caught, and the last stream poisoned, will we realize that we can't eat money. The final section of our road trip around Oregon, the Central Nature Trail, has been a journey of wonder, a journey of awe-inspiring landscapes and quiet rivers, deep time and pure silence. And those glimpses, those gifts of deep connection, awe and immersion in the natural world, ask that we give something back too. They ask that we care. We are all, each one of us, stewards of this land. And experiencing that wonder, and there's plenty of that here, is the foundation from which that care grows, whether it's the top of a mountain or a lava cave beneath the earth. We drive north to the Columbia River Gorge, a 4,000-foot deep river canyon that meanders along the northern edge of Oregon for 80 jaw-dropping miles. We are close to Portland now, where we began. But we have one stop left.
Well, we've reached the end of our road trip, and what a spectacular place to end. I'm on the bridge overlooking the 620-foot drop of Multnomah Falls, one of the most awe-inspiring places, not just in Oregon, not just in the Pacific Northwest, but in the whole of America. And it's a fitting place to end such an epic trip. This is what Oregon is all about, raw nature, wild nature, and the pure joy of exploring this unbelievably awesome and spectacular part of the country. We've seen a lot. In Portland, we discovered community and independence, and we ate and drank and laughed our way all the way through that beautiful, eclectic diversity. In the Willamette Valley, we found entrepreneurship and grit and a connection to the land and determination that has given birth to some of the best wine you will ever drink in your life. In Eugene, we found artists, we found community, we found inspiration and innovation, and we found adventure wherever we went. On the coast, it was wild, it was rugged. There is nowhere quite like it, where the Pacific Ocean crashes up against deserted, windswept beaches and lush forests and small towns with amazing fish and chips, some of the best you'll ever eat. We kayaked with whales, we hiked headlands, and we stood at the feet of giants. But we also found quiet reflection in nature. We found wonder and awe from the top of a deep blue sparkling crater lake, like a sapphire jewel rained down from the sky to the dark recesses of the earth and the quiet rivers where salmon and trout jump on every reel. We learned of deep time. We felt humility. We learned of stewardship and conservation of the land. We stopped, we listened, and we felt a part of this beautiful wilderness that covers every corner of this state. But more than anything, we made new friends, the guides and locals, who took us under their wing and showed us their hidden treasures and secret spots, and we thank them all for that. No one thing can define a place or a people, but in Oregon, three might do.
Weird, wild, and wondrous. That is the Oregonian spirit, and these are its hidden trails.
Thanks for joining us for the third leg of our road trip around Oregon. If you'd like to take these hidden trails yourself, you can find out how to do so by going to traveloregon.com. Lots of great info up there about this trip, all the episodes in this series, and everything else you need to know to plan your next Oregon adventure. And though this may be the end of this series, there's more to come. So make sure to follow and subscribe wherever you get your shows. Thank you to all the expert guides and locals featured on this show. Nathan Dwyer from Main Street Tours in Ashland, Chris Pleasance from Wanderlust Tours in Bend, and Alicia Little Leaf from Little Leaf Guide Services in Warm Springs. We couldn't have done it without you. Thank you for some awesome times we will never forget. This series was produced by Armchair Productions, the audio experts for the travel industry. Find out more at armchair-productions.com. I wrote and presented the show, and Jason Patton engineered and produced it. We'll see you next time on the Hidden Trails of Oregon.
There you have it. Hope you enjoyed that. I love the way Aaron puts together his destination episodes. It is a bang-up job, to say the least. What narration? I mean, his travel writing really sweeps you away to Oregon there, and the combination of history and interviews and on-the-ground travel. It's a wonderful series, so don't forget to check it out if you're looking for a new podcast and a new destination to learn about. This one, Hidden Trails of Oregon, is a wonderful, wonderful show. And thanks to the state of Oregon and Aaron once again for allowing us to share this episode here on the Zero to Travel podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Now, my favorite quote from this episode, when Aaron said, "Nature doesn't just make us feel wonder, it makes us want to protect it." I absolutely loved that. When I heard that, it gave me the chills. And it reminded me, this is one of the big reasons why we get out and travel, right? This is the importance of travel. Seeing something on your computer or on television is one thing, but when you go there and you see it and you take in the awe-inspiring views and you get that feeling that you get when we're in nature, where we're connected to nature, having those experiences does really elevate our willingness and perhaps our awareness and our activism, maybe, all of these issues around protecting nature. We get protective. And that's why it's important to get out there and experience nature, because it reminds us that we, as individuals, can do what we can do within our little sphere of influence to protect nature, to make it accessible to everybody, and to make sure it's around for generations to come. So, of course, that can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. Everybody kind of can do this in their own way, from picking up garbage in your local neighborhood, or maybe getting involved with local community stuff, to, you know, maybe global projects. Everybody can do something. And I just wanted to come out of this episode by sharing that quote and challenging myself and challenging you to get out in nature today, within the next, say, 24 hours, and maybe just contemplate a way or two that you may be able to contribute to the preservation of that nature, whether it's for future generations or just for the day, whatever that means to you. We'll throw that out there. Thanks again for listening to this special episode, and I'll see you next week. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.